And welcome to Kind of Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And we are talking today about a
very... Many things.
Yeah. Yes.
But with a focus on something serious.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. As some folks, I hope you are aware of the situation that is happening in Chechnya.
Allegedly, that's the complicated thing.
See...
It's mostly been fairly confirmed, but that whole region, as well as the various sources that have exposed the story, are known for propaganda.
Well, no, not quite accurately. So we know the propaganda comes out of Russia.
Yeah.
That happens.
Yes.
But the newspaper that broke the stories...
And actually, the former Russian territories as well sometimes struggle.
So the newspaper that broke the story... is very well respected. It is not a state-run paper.
Okay.
It is, you know, they are reliable.
Okay.
Think like, you know, the National Post of Russia.
Okay.
Kind of thing.
So, of Russia? You
know, yeah, well.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Russian newspaper.
Okay.
That broke the original story. Now, for folks who are thinking, what story? What? I have spent the last 2 weeks under a very large rock. Please fill me in. Certainly. So, Chechnya... For folks who are thinking, where the heck is Chechnya? Well, it's near Georgia, which is near Turkey and Azerbaijan. I had to look at a map. I'm not going to lie.
I had to
look at a map. You didn't, apparently. You knew exactly where it was.
Chechnya's been having problems on and off for the past 20 or 30 years. Well, I mean, they've been having problems on and off ever since the Russians invaded in the late 1800s, but I mean, they've been having particular problems over the past 20, 30 years.
So let's have a bit of context here. So the the USSR, so the Soviet Union,
yes,
back and in the
70s, 80s, and early 90s.
Absolutely. Yeah. At the very latest, there was Gorbachev and the fall of the USSR. Well, in the 90s, the Soviet Empire was crumbling, it was collapsing, and all of the different bits of it declared independence.
Yes.
So Georgia, which is now an independent state, declared independence.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bit of a struggle for a separatist movement within Chechnya, which is a region in Russia, just to the south of Russia, just up over the top of Georgia.
And I think it was about maybe 10 years ago now. I probably should look it up, but there was a story that got into international news where Chechen separatists planted a bomb in a school, and I don't know if it went off at the wrong time or not, but it did injure a lot of innocent people, including children, which did not garner a lot of support from the international community, even people who were sympathetic to people who were trying to separate from Russia. They very much had troubles getting support for that. So to give you sort of a context about the Caucasus in general, they've sort of never really been left alone. The Caucasus Mountains are very high, and the valleys are very deep. So there's a lot of cultures in the Caucasus that have been fairly isolated for the past, I don't know, a couple thousand years. When Russia took over the region and started building tunnels and bridges and made all the valleys physically accessible, and this was in the 30s or 40s, I think, so it wasn't recent, but it wasn't a long time ago either. And they've had enough time to adapt. I mean, this is not sort of an indigenous culture being slammed into the modern world. They did have telephones and trains and stuff like that. It's just that when you live in a deep valley, 200 kilometers from the closest major city, I mean, you have one guy in the village who has a phone kind of thing.
And they're also much, much closer to Turkey than they are to Moscow.
Yes, yes, for sure, actually. And they've had more support from Turkey because the foothills, the southern foothills of the Caucasus do tumble into Turkey to a degree. And they've it's really weird because Turkey's not super friendly with its minority populations. Like if you look at the Kurds, for example. But the Caucasians in Turkey have never really had an issue. And also to give you a context, usually when people talk about Caucasians, they're talking about white Europeans.
Yeah.
But in the context of the story, you need to know that the Caucasians are people from the Caucasus. So we're not talking about like Norse or French or Italian. When we're talking about Caucasian, we're talking about Circassians and Georgians and Abaza and Abkhaza. And I had to learn all of these because... one of my former professors was a Caucasianist. I even had to learn how to pronounce some of the languages. And I think it's Abaza, only has two vowels and over 120 consonants. And it's possible to make a grammatical sentence with no vowels in it. It's really not a fun language to pronounce. But it also means that he had reasons to be in the area, and he taught us all sorts of interesting stories about the cultures of the region. But anyway, point is, this is kind of like Finland or Poland, where if you look at their history, they've only existed as an autonomous region for little blinks in history, because Poland used to be a kingdom, and then it became Austro-Hungarian, and then it became Prussian, and then it became Russian, and then it just sort of changed hands so many times. And if you look at the history of Europe, every so often you'd have Poland, it would exist again, but for like a 30-year period, and then it would get invaded again. And the Caucasus are very much like that, where they've not really had an enduring period of autonomy over the past maybe 600, 700 years. They've been a very invaded part of the world, which is weird because it's not very invadable, because it's all mountains and valleys.
So in terms of, if you're looking at a map, you've got Russia, which is a huge, huge thing. And then, you know, people are familiar with kind of Eastern Europe. So we're talking like Lithuania, Belarus, Ukraine, which is right next door to Russia.
Yes.
And then down a bit, you've got the Black Sea. And then under that is Turkey.
Yeah.
Well, to the immediate right is a tiny sliver of land between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea.
Yeah.
And that is the Russian gateway to the Middle East.
Yeah.
That is Georgia, Azerbaijan, and then the territories of Chechnya and a couple of other Russian territories as well. So it's actually really important to the Russians because it is that gateway, that land gateway into the Middle East.
And the Caucasus also spill into northwestern Iran as well. So, I mean, it is...
It's a hop, skip, and a jump from Syria, Iraq, Turkmenistan, you know, all of these oil-rich areas as well. So anyway, that's a little bit about a context about
the history,
absolutely. Now, Chechnya's had a president that's kind of been able to do his own thing for a while.
Yeah.
In return for support from Moscow, essentially in return for a blind eye.
Yeah.
If Moscow just, you know, looks the other way, if the Chechen leader is able to keep the separatists under control, Moscow is not going to look too closely at what they're doing. That's kind of the unspoken deal that's been happening.
So they're a semi-autonomous region, not an autonomous region, because they don't have their own government, they don't have their own elections.
They have their own elections.
Oh, okay.
But
it's more like a province. I think it's ambiguous. It's not really...
They don't have their own armed... Well, they have their own armed forces, but they're not a state. So it's a semi-state. It's awkward. Like, they're not an independent country.
There's a term for this.
Many of them would quite like to be.
There's a term for this. It's an SAR, Special Administrative Region, where they technically fall under the heading of another country, but they do have their own government and their own. They probably also have a separate legal system. I only know about SARs because I used to live in Hong Kong, which was an SAR, which technically was part of China, but it had British law.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was... But anyway.
So the administration, actually, and what we've discovered doing some research on it, is the administration of Chechnya is technically Russian. So that's where everyone's like, you know, Russia should do this, Russia should do that. And you're thinking, well, this is happening in Chechnya. Why are we yelling at the Russians? Well, it's much like if, just to pick a random one, the Yukon. If the Yukon started rounding up all of their homosexuals with the Yukon Provincial Police, you know, we would call on the Canadian government to kind of put a bit of pressure.
I think probably a better equivalent would be if Costa Rica started doing this and people look to the United States.
Yeah, because it's a territory.
It is a territory, but it's its own region technically, but really it isn't. It's a colony. We're too modern and polite to say, but America colonized this place against their will. But yeah, so I mean, did I say Costa Rica or Puerto Rico? I said Costa Rica.
Yeah, I think you meant to say Puerto Rico.
Yeah, because one of those is right and the other one is not.
I'm pretty sure we meant Puerto Rico. we apologize for that slight inaccuracy.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we found is that about 2 weeks ago, the newspaper in Russia broke the news story that...
Do you have the name of the newspaper?
I have the name.
Are you just afraid to pronounce it? Novaya
Gazeta.
Okay.
Broke the news story. And essentially said more than 100 gay men have been detained in Chechnya in connection with their non-traditional sexual orientation. Essentially, they've been rounded up for being gay.
Right.
And sent allegedly into these concentration camps. Now, the journalist, Lina Malashina, who broke the story itself, has actually gone into hiding in the wake of the story.
I think at some point in time, we need to have a discussion about what makes a concentration camp and how is it different from a prison or a ghetto?
Yeah, or a gulag.
Or a gulag, if it actually genuinely is a full-blown concentration camp, as we have seen really only a couple times in history, That's very, very different from if it's a prisoner or gulag.
Well, let's give a context here of concentration camps. So everyone's familiar with Auschwitz, for example, unless you're Sean Spicer, in which case he forgets that...
Or some other denier, yeah. Yeah.
Although Sean Spicer's not a denier. He just momentarily forgot that Auschwitz gassed people.
That was like a thing. Yeah.
Yes.
The historical, the first instance known of concentration camps was the Brits.
I was about to go there. So it was the British, and yep, they actually, it was during the Boer Wars.
Yes.
And they rounded up, you know, families and members of a particular...
It was Dutch South Africans. Not Afrikaan, it was Dutch-speaking South Africans that they had rounded up. And Afrikaan was sort of adapting to the British rule by trying, well, I don't want to say trying to speak English because that sounds kind of mean. But no, they adapted English into their culture, and then Afrikaan, which is sort of this blend of Dutch and English and Bantu languages. But anyway, so it was the Dutch in South Africa. And the Dutch in South Africa, before the Boer War, they were doing things right, where they would go somewhere to be like, is anyone using this land? Anyone using this? You are using this land. Okay, we'll just go over here. Anyone using this land?
The Dutch Empire was a trading empire.
Yeah.
It was a non-colonial insofar as it was mainly trade.
Yeah. They weren't really warring. They would go to an area and they'd be like, are you using this?
We're digressing a little bit. Yeah. The whole point here is we're talking about concentration camps.
Yes.
And in the British case, during the Boer War, is that everyone who was of X...
Yes.
...ethnic makeup or category or what have you, goes there. So in the Second World War... Hitler rounded up homosexuals as a group, and also rounded up Jews and political prisoners and so on and so forth.
Romani as
an entire grouping of people. So there's certainly a line that's been drawn there. You know, Hitler went out of his way to find homosexuals, round them up, and send them to this one camp.
Well, what makes a concentration camp different from a prison, though, is that a concentration camp, you get sent there to die.
Yeah, where's a prison you get sent there for? Breaking some kind of law or what have you.
And you'll probably come out alive the other end?
Or there is, in prisons, there's at least the theory of a judicial process.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. No, I think what's happening, or what's been alleged to be happening in Chechnya is, you know, actually there's some harrowing reports. I'm gonna cut to one now.
It doesn't sound, from what I read, it doesn't sound like they're industrializing genocide, because that was the big thing. Because Hitler sending minorities to prison, to be honest, he was not the first person in history to do that, but he was, the Nazi regime was the first to industrialize the process of killing people.
Yeah.
Large numbers, very efficiently, low amount of time, and I don't think that's what's happening in Chechnya.
It's not on an industrial scale, but we are talking over 100 people here, which is a phenomenal amount. And, you know, just to give you an example here, so the Guardian was able to identify two men who had fled Chechnya, who had actually been through the camp, two separate witnesses who were able to corroborate each other's stories independently.
Right.
Their locations are unknown. Their names have been redacted or changed for the sake of the story.
Also for the safety of themselves and their families.
Absolutely. So this one gentleman, we're going to call him Adam, he said that they attached metal clamps to his fingers and toes, and then cranked a handle on the machine and ran powerful electric shocks through their body.
Okay.
If he didn't scream, other people would come in and they'd beat him with sticks to a pulp. As they tortured him, they would shout verbal abuse at him for being gay and demanded to know the names of other gay men in Chechnya. And the way that they even got him in the first place, and this is so... I mean, this strikes a nerve in the gay community, and I think it'll upset everybody here and the folks listening. The way that they even captured Adam to begin with is that he got a message from somebody that he knew was gay, a friend of his.
Right.
And was, you know, can you go meet me at, we'll say, the 7-Eleven? I'm pretty sure they don't have one in Chechnya, but for argument's sake...
It's a global company. You never know where they've shown up.
So, can you meet me at the 7-Eleven? Let's get tacos. You know, that's an innocuous, you know, phrase. You know, let's go meet up. He shows up, six people there, some in uniform, state uniform, bundle him into the back of a van. And, you know, this happened, but on such a wide scale. It's truly shocking. And it makes me think, have we not learned anything? Because if you think back, you know, the McCarthy scare, and you know the fruit machine in Canada. I mean, Ottawa has its own history of rounding up homos or rounding in order to expel them from the civil service.
Yeah.
But it has its own history of trying to find them anywhere they can. You know, it's truly shocking what happened. And if they weren't killed, I haven't been able to find any reports of any being killed yet. Certainly lots of torture has been reported. But I mean, I haven't had, they were all told that they were going to this camp to die, you know? So yeah, it is, as far as they're concerned, it's a concentration camp.
Are they only targeting men, or are they getting across the board?
No, just men.
Just men?
By what we're able to find, yeah. It's been called a mop up.
A mop up.
Yep. Cleaning up Chechen towns and villages of any known homosexuals. So certainly a very worrying, very, very worrying developments there.
Do they, are they doing it on a religious basis or sort of a ethnic cleansing? Or have they revealed why they're doing this? Any discussion on that?
Well, it was a really interesting piece here. And let me see if I can find it. There was, I found somewhere which talked about the history, like, I mean, people tend to forget, you know, these things don't happen in isolation.
Yeah, it's not spontaneous. There's always a wind up to this kind of thing.
You know, these things are never, you know, happening just out of the blue. I'm just trying to find.
So to give you some of the context that I learned about the history of Chechnya, actually, and the Caucasus in general, from this professor of mine who would teach, well, he wasn't a Caucasianist per se. He would just teach phonology, but he also did comparative religions. And one of the reasons why is because the history of Christianity was actually a history of revolution. You would have early Christians, and then you had the Council of Nicene, and then Christianity was overhauled, and then you had the Iconoclast, and then Christianity was overhauled, and then you had the Holy Roman Catholic Empire, and then Christianity was overhauled. And every time this would happen, people from the old way of being a Christian, they would always run away. And as it happens, if you fled into the mountains of the Caucasus, you could settle down in a valley and be left alone, because without helicopters or mountain passes or tunnels, it's really inaccessible. And the Roman Empire and the various past organizations that were trying to wipe out the previous iteration of Christianity would just leave them alone. And so as you go from valley to valley to valley to valley through the Caucasus, you get this really interesting sort of living museum of what Christianity looked like 1600 years ago, 1200 years ago, 1000 years ago. And some of the valleys are insanely progressive, and some of them are insanely conservative, because they reflect some history plus time, because, I mean, they're not in a bottle. They do evolve in their own little way. And so when the Eastern Orthodox Church, the Russian Orthodox Church, sort of came in and tried to update everybody, some of them integrated a little bit more easily than others, because the ones from the very progressive eras of Christian history, they were sort of like, this is weird. And the ones that were even more conservative, and by conservative I mean right-leaning, not conservative as in like maintaining.
Keep things still.
Yeah. They looked at the Orthodox Church and saw them as being not going far enough. And so, I mean, I don't know much about, I mean, I know the pattern, the overall pattern of the Caucasus, and presumably Chechnya fell down a little bit hard on the right-leaning side, because this is not typical necessarily of the Caucasus. Because parts of Georgia, for example, are known for being very progressive.
So, I mean,
Azerbaijan as well, actually, very progressive.
So we're talking here, and I didn't find it right now, but I did read it earlier today in our research for this. And I really want to kind of emphasize here, you know, it isn't like the president of Chechnya woke up one day and said, you know what, Ramzan Kadyrov, I apologize to any Chechens who are insulted by my mispronunciation, didn't wake up today and, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to round up all the homos. Mm. And, you know, that's not, it doesn't happen like that. So Chechnya has, for a long time, you know, you could be harassed at a bar, or, you know, you could be, you know, the low-level police harassment kind of happens.
Yeah.
You know, some extortion, usually what it happens, you know, give us some money or we'll tell your family that you're actually gay, kind of thing. And it's kind of that low-level crime that happens, that kind of abuse of LGBT folks by police and paramilitary forces that is allowed to happen in countries where there isn't...
Now, is it that the police and paramilitary forces are harassing the LGBT community, or is it that the rest of society is harassing them and the cops are letting it happen? Because there's a slight difference, because that's the history of North America, where the police just didn't care. Mm-hmm. Like, there were not a lot of police truncheons involved in the queer history of North America, specifically. Yeah. But there was a whole bunch of, like, firebombings and murders and stabbings and beatings and robberies, and the cops would just shrug and say, well, I suppose so. So, I mean, there's a different tone mm-hmm. to the police tracking you down versus the police not caring.
Well, no, I think this was a case of police...
helping.
Being opportunists.
Okay.
Extorting. I mean, it's a very similar one situation to what's actually happening now in Tanzania. I believe it's Tanzania. Let me just double check. Yeah, Tanzania. You know, and they are cracking down on LGBT people, not to the extreme extent that we are seeing in Chechnya.
Right.
Let's kind of, let's have that, put that out there. But there, you know, if they find out, now, usually it would be a case of, you know, oh, you're gay, we found out you're gay. So against the law, we'll crack a few heads, knock a few skulls together, get some money out of you, send you on your way.
Yeah.
Week later, do the same thing.
Yeah.
Forcing LGBT gay people into the closet and living very, very secret double lives. So in Chechnya, people have been living secret double lives. You know, in order to know who other gay men are, it was very elaborate, secretive kind of communication techniques, very sort of cloak and dagger. But we don't know really what's kind of inspired this sudden crackdown, this sudden cleanup. You know, it could be anything. It could be hearing Western news. You know, we knew, for example, me and you reported that when DOMA was passed, the Defense of Marriage Act in the States.
Oh yes,
we saw an impact where LGBT rights regressed in certain countries.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like this kickback to development in the West. And, you know, and LGBT rights is seen as very pro-Western. So kind of to prove their pro-Russia point of view, maybe they're going back the other way. Maybe it's a reaction to the rise of LGBT rights activists in Moscow. They're trying to crack down on it in the
capital region, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't, I've not been able to find exactly why that kind of happened and why that started. There's an organization called the LGBT, the Russian LGBT Network. It's where most people have kind of been directing their help and resources. So they created a caucus helpline on the 29th of March. Bearing in mind, it is now only the 16th that we're recording this. It is the 16th of April. And, you know, in that time, they've had 50 calls from people who are in urgent need of evacuation. So we've got people who absolutely, they're fearing for their lives. They're fearing that they'll be tied up to a metal pole and electrocuted and beaten with sticks. And they need out. You know, you can go to www.lgbtnet.org if you want to support this organization directly. We very much recommend that
you do that. And Canada does recognize Russia and the Soviet states as being source countries for LGBT refugees.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's interesting what they're trying to do. They're not only trying to coordinate the evacuation, which is absolutely the first step, evacuate those gay men into the other bits of Russia that are a bit more...
Less bad.
Yes, less bad. So the Russian Investigative Committee... or the General Prosecutor's Office, neither of them have actually begun to investigate this alleged abuse of power and this order of rounding up homosexuals. And
In
Chechnya.
Yeah.
So the Russian Investigative Committee and the General Prosecutor's Office is probably I don't know, maybe they're centered in Moscow, in Petersburg. You know, it's the central Russian kind of response unit. For that, so on the 8th of April, Dmitry Muratov, the editor-in-chief, addressed Yuri Chaika, the general prosecutor of the Russian Federation, and called to initiate an investigation. Essentially, on the 8th of April, which was just last week, they said, you know, you should investigate this massive abuse of power. We're hearing case after case after case, 50 people wanting to flee.
It was about a year ago that we reported on the political situation in Russia, that the way it went is that you couldn't do anything LGBT-related in public.
Yeah. But the no-say-gay law.
Yeah, the no-say-gay law, but the Russian government maintained that they would continue to protect you in your private life so long as you did nothing in public. that because there was I think it was a foreign diplomat who said that if you are well, this is what they say anyway. I mean, the reality is obviously going to be different, but at least the spin, the official story is that it is not illegal to be LGBT in Russia. It's just illegal to do LGBT in Russia, especially in public. But they will still protect you as a citizen.
Yeah. So if you get robbed, theoretically, if you know someone will do a robbery investigation, they look into it. You know, if you get beaten up in the street, theoretically, someone would look into it as an assault.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to be like, oh well, tough luck, that happened. I mean, they might. Evidently, I mean, it's Russia. It's hard to know exactly what will happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway,
but I do remember this guy. He said that we will continue to physically protect all of our citizens, regardless of their identity, so long as they don't do blah, 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 blah. And so at least that's the official story. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if they are going to stand by that, you know, all Russians are Russians at heart and we should protect all Russians, then this would be one of those situations where they're like, well, you know, we agree the gays, not so cool, but this is not in the books of things that you can do to them. So, I mean, they might step in, at least based on the official story that they gave. I think it was about a year ago we did this.
Yeah.
Is this familiar?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's familiar to me. I mean, we've been doing this a long time. I'm not sure if it's a year ago. But so last week on the 8th, Investigations Unit, you should investigate this. Please do that.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to the 11th, and the International Human Rights Organization, Agora, filed an official complaint to the Basmani court, essentially saying, look, they're not investigating.
Yeah.
It's been days. This has been going on for a week and a half, and the Russian institution responsible for looking into it isn't looking into it.
Yeah.
You know, so now we're like, what are we doing? So the Russian LGBT network is actually looking at this as a human rights abuse.
Oh, yes.
So the Russian government is currently turning a blind eye. The legal apparatus that would be responsible for looking into this, the Attorney General, the Russian Investigation Committee, the General Prosecutor's Office, they're not looking into it, and they ought to be looking into it.
Yeah.
So there's certainly a bit of a slow response there. You know, so the Russian LGBT network is looking into trying to put a bit of pressure on them to come forward. The UN Human Rights Council have come out in support of trying to get an investigation. The US State Department released a statement in support of it. The General Council of Europe, you know, and then the usual kind of, you know,
Amnesty.
Yeah. 50 US congressmen have come forward. I think it might be closer to 60 now have come forward. Stonewall, the International Lesbian and Gay Association of Europe, have come forward. So, I mean, certainly a lot of this, there's a lot of pressure building at the international level to kind of, you know, be like, you know what, guy, you need to do something about this.
But I think Canada might be letting itself down.
Canada is letting me down as a
so it's a bit of context.
Yeah.
But I live two blocks away from the Canadian Russian embassy.
Yeah.
The Russian
embassy in Canada.
In Canada, yeah. They have consulates all over the country, but this is like the headquarters. And I walk past it to come to Luke's place because Luke and I actually don't live that very far apart. And nothing, no activity.
Yep. I was there earlier in the week, nothing.
No flags, no flowers. Granted, if anybody put anything up in protest, it would probably be taken down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Even if not for political reasons, just like strange people coming up onto your property and taping things onto your fence. That's a weird behavior. I mean, most protests are defined by weird behavior, let's be honest. And that's part of what makes them function, is the fact that you see weird behavior. You're like, oh, that's weird, I should pay attention. But anyway, nothing. Nothing at all. Silent streets. It's really peculiar. And the government, and this is, you have this story in the bag.
Yeah.
What is the Canadian government doing about this?
Well, let's put a bit of context here. So you mentioned that both me and you, so CanQueer, have gone to the embassy and have seen nothing.
Nothing.
Now, you look at the Russian embassy in London.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest central embassies in the world for Russia. And hundreds of people turned out.
Yes. You know,
street blocked, hours and hours of protest. They actually created a triangle out of pink flowers, referencing, of course, as we mentioned earlier, that Hitler actually rounded up homosexuals and tagged them with a pink triangle.
Yes.
So as kind of a homage or a reminder of, you know, these kinds of concepts are dangerous, these protesters in London created a pink triangle flower kind of in front of the embassy. Now, we reached out to Randy Boisson, our MP, who is the special advisor on LGBT issues, early last week. And one of the points that we asked to speak to Randy Boisson about was specifically this issue in Chechnya.
Yeah.
We heard nothing. Not a sausage. Nothing came out at all.
Not a sausage?
Not a sausage. Which is a Briticism for nothing.
Okay.
But what we did finally find is yesterday, so on the 15th, so last Saturday, if you're paying attention, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, the Honourable Chrystia Freeland, released a statement.
Okay.
This is a long time before the Canadian government does a thing. And it's very shocking. So even last week, the UK Foreign Secretary demanded it. The US Congress have been kind of up in arms.
This is 2.5 weeks or so since the story broke, it took, for them to write a letter. What does the letter say?
The letter essentially says, recent and ongoing reports of prosecution of gay and bisexual men in Chechnya are reprehensible. We call on the Russian authorities to thoroughly investigate these reports and to immediately assure the safety of all persons in Chechnya who may be at risk due to their sexual orientation. It's a pretty boilerplate kind of, you know, stop it. It's not good. Don't do that.
They probably already had this written and ready to go in their cabinet, and they just whited out another country's name and put in Chechnya and Crayon.
Well, you say that, but I mean, we were going to talk later at the end of the episode about other countries, not as bad as Chechnya right now, but still pretty darn bad.
Still doing stuff, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's astounding that the Canada took as long to respond as it did. The UN... Human Rights Council responded quicker.
Mm-hmm.
If the UN can agree to something quicker than the Canadian Parliament, that's just shocking.
Well, I think it's... The UN usually takes forever. Any situation that has a veto vote, but the Human Rights Commission at the UN does not have... No nation has a veto vote at the Human Rights Commission. So, basically, they just get into a room, people talk, then they vote. It could take 2 days to make a major decision. Because the moment you get somebody with veto power, that's when things get complicated. Because then you have to convince them. But yeah, there's...
So I did find that article I referred to earlier, and it was Radio Free Europe, which is a news agency based in Europe. They actually have a branch in Moscow with their Russian office. And they actually were able to interview another three people. And I bring this up because one of the things that we want to make sure is crystal clear here is we are referencing The Guardian, who interviewed two people.
Yeah.
We're referencing the very reputable Russian newspaper, which interviewed a number of people as well.
Yeah.
We're referencing Radio Free Europe, which is very reputable, that interviewed another three people again.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's a lot of people all saying the same thing here. And one of the things that came up in The Guardian post that Adam said, or maybe it was the other guy, I forget his name, well, his fake name, but one of the things that they said was, you know, once they're done beating you up and kind of getting the names of all of the other homos, they drop them off at home and say, FYI, your son is a faggot, and walk away.
Yeah.
So now you have to deal with that response from your family. Now, in Chechnya... After being tortured for a week. In Chechnya, honor killings, not uncommon.
Yeah.
Especially around homosexuality, at least according to these reports from... Radio for Europe's Russian office. So, I mean, it is extremely dangerous. The state might not be killing off these people, but the impact of having them outed to their families, many, many of these people are leading double lives.
Yeah.
They're being outed to their wives and kids, their bosses, their employment. You know, it's a massive, massive, massive story that these men are being...
I retract something I said earlier. Even though much of the Caucasus are... various historical forms of Christian. Chechnya was converted to Sunni Islam in the 16th century by the Ottomans. So, yeah, honor killings, these are the kind of honor killings that even in Iran, people are like, that's old-fashioned, why are you doing
that? I mean, that does make sense, and it actually makes sense in terms of... let me just have a look here, because it refers to another story that came out, and actually the BBC even reported on this, where they were worried about a jihad being called on this. So yeah. Chechen Muslim clerics on the 3rd of April, 2 days after the paper's revelations.
Actually, I think... Okay, sorry, go on.
Say that this report insulted their faith and the dignity of Chechen men. So, you know, the biggest religious leaders are saying that even by talking about the fact that these men may or may not have been rounded up in concentration camp undermines the integrity of Chechen and Muslim men, and have asked for reprisals against the journalists. It has sent many of them running for the hills because, of course, you know, these are dangerous areas where reprisals can mean that.
So really what you're saying is, how dare you say that gay men exist?
Absolutely.
In our region. And actually, that is something else that I wanted to bring up, is that we do, out of habit in North America, whenever we talk about anything that we talk about here on Can Queer, we have a tendency to say LGBT or LGBTQ, but this really is, we have to... When relevant, like whenever we talk about trans issues, because there are issues that really only affect people who are trans-identified or trans spectrum. And when we say, when the story is about trans people, we don't say LGBT, we just say trans people. This is a story about men who have sex with men. This is the GB spectrum.
Yeah.
And there's no story about women, or I don't even think people are permitted to be trans-identified. So, I mean, the fact that trans people aren't being targeted by this, that's not necessarily a good thing. It's just probably that they're so oppressed, they're not even capable of being trans at all, let alone be oppressed for being trans. But this is a story about gay men.
Yeah.
And bisexual men, really.
Or people perceived to be gay.
People perceived to be gay, which is another... major issue, because then you're going to get perfectly heterosexual men who just happen to be a little bit soft.
Or you get gay men where it's not okay to be gay. So, for example, it was reported by Novaya Gazeta, which is the original Russian paper, that amongst those 100 men rounded up were Muslim clerics with close ties to the president of Chechnya, and well-known Chechen TV presenters. So influential people with big public profiles.
Sort of being slapped with a scarlet letter.
Absolutely. And then, you know, it kind of makes a bit more sense where the Muslim clerics are going, how dare you even insinuate that these men are caught for being gay? There's no gay men here. Look the other way. Nothing to see.
Yeah.
You know, and it's extremely worrying, because there are reports of targeted contract killings against journalists in the area.
Yeah.
So there's certainly a culture, a very predominant culture of silencing happening, retribution demanded on those journalists. It's extremely worrying.
Journalism in the Russian states in general has been fairly dangerous for the past, I don't know, basically since the Tsars fell. It's on and off been dangerous to be a journalist.
So Ramzan Kadyrov, the Chechen president, released on social media on Sunday, and for folks listening, there may have been developments, we actually are recording this on Sunday the 16th, released on his social media that there has been, and I quote, grandiose improvements in the human rights approach in the Muslim majority Chechnya. So he's claiming on his social media that he's met with the Human Rights Council in the area, that things are vastly improved, nothing to see here, folks. Let's, you know, go home, mind your own business.
I feel like we should take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I'm going to say that we should take that with about as much salt as there is in the Caspian Sea, no, the Black Sea.
Or even worse, in a jar of Marmite.
I want to know why Canada was so slow to respond.
Yes.
I want to know what we as Canadians can do to kind of implore that extra pressure. You know, Canadian law enforcement maybe needs to step up and encourage Russian law enforcement to actually investigate.
Well, we as a nation are the world's number one import, I don't know what the target nation, I guess, for LGBT refugees in general. So, I mean, as a nation, we're already doing something very important, which is accepting the escapees. Now, that's very good, but ideally, they shouldn't have to leave their home lives. They shouldn't have to leave their home country. They shouldn't have to uproot themselves. So, I mean, the ideal would be
not to have concentration camps in Chechnya.
Exactly. So, I mean, having political activity to stop this from happening in the first place would be the ideal target. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about, is Canada doing enough? We're doing something quite significant, but the truth is, we were doing that anyway.
Yeah.
So we're not really...
How are we responding to this specific incident? Absolutely. Especially with a special advisor recently announced just for that role.
Yeah.
You know, it's very concerning. But we'll be talking more a bit about this and some other news. Bad news, but rounding out with some good news. I'm determined to end on a happy note.
Right.
Just after this. This is Hercules and Love Affair, a queer band out of the States. Featuring Faris Badwan, and this is the song Controller, and we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media, and we have been talking about the very serious topic of the alleged concentration camps in Chechnya, referring, of course, to reports in The Guardian, Radio Free Europe, and the Russian newspaper that broke the story. As we mentioned throughout the show, stay informed as best you can. It's very difficult to get any kind of information out of Chechnya. We mentioned, of course, the contract killings against journalists, the culture of silence, retribution declared by clerics.
It's very easy to get news out of the region. It's very difficult to get news out of the region that is considered reliable.
Mm.
I think that's the trick.
Absolutely.
Any news story that you get that has a reliable source that can be cross-referenced from another newspaper or agency that also is generally known for being reliable. So, like, if the BBC and I was about to say Al Jazeera. A lot of people don't trust Al Jazeera, but it's generally considered trusted.
Very reputable.
Generally, yeah. So if both of those sources have stories that overlap significantly, chances are you're probably seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, this goes back to the usual.
The further down the chain, theoretically, the more people have looked at it and verified it. Yeah. Absolutely.
This kind of ties in partly to the fake news phenomenon that we're running into. But anyway, the point is, stay vigilant, read, question what you read. Some of the questions that I had earlier in the episode technically could have been offensive, saying basically, like, is this really actually happening, or is this just blown out of proportion? That was just me doing my due diligence. That's what you should be doing. Is this really a concentration camp, or is it just a gulag? Well, the fact that they're dropping them off at their family's doorsteps,
it's hard to say. You know, have people been killed there? We weren't able to find any sources that say that.
Yeah.
Have people been brutally tortured? Multiple people have come forward and said that. You know, have people had their lives put at risk by returning them to the possible, honor killings? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's hard to say what more can be done. Now, I want to talk about one more bad news story. before we move on, and that is we are talking about Indonesia. Two men, 23 and 20, in the province of Aceh, went to a central area, a central district. It was actually, they went to the city, they rented out a room in a hotel where they were able to come together and do gentleman things mm-hmm. with each other. I'm sure enough can be inferred there.
They did what young people do.
Absolutely, what 20 and 23-year-old people in love do. Yes. But the police were called, they were busted. There is a video which we're not going to link or put or play on the show here because it is
inhumane.
Absolutely, yeah. And it is actually a video recorded by the police raiding, and you see the kind of the trauma and the terror in the eyes of these two young men, and they were facing up to 100 lashes each as a result of gay sex,
yes.
Which is what they're being accused of. At the time. Now, they were being punished under Sharia law. We mentioned earlier that Chechnya is under a strong Muslim rule.
Indonesia has the world's largest Muslim population.
Yeah.
But they're also considered to be fairly progressive in the grand mm-hmm. scheme of Muslim nations.
But I want to put a quick caveat here. Although both of these examples that we've looked at are very bad news and are in Muslim states.
Yeah.
We did not talk today about the reams of bad news out of the states. So
yeah.
various states, Texas, North Carolina, looking to tackle gay marriage, North Carolina undermining trans rights. You know, lots of things happen that we are aware of in mm-hmm. Christian states.
Oh, yes.
So maybe we'll get to that another day, but I wanted to talk about that. So UCLA, the University of California, in the Williams Institute, recently did a study on Indonesia. They mm-hmm. looked at what is the impact to employment, education, healthcare, what is the cost of the physical attacks, the psychological attacks, the fact that yeah. if you beat up a homo, that guy can't go to work and can't be productive.
And not just that, but exactly, it's production. What is mm-hmm. the impact of this on production? Not just production of goods, but also productions of services, production
Absolutely.
of being able to participate in society and making the world a better place.
So these two men, 20 and 23, 100 lashes, as an example of what's costing the Indonesian country
yeah.
$12 billion a year, estimated, according yeah. to this study. Like, homophobia has a very, very steep price tag.
Yes.
I think that's the kind of the story that kind of comes out here is, well, you know,
there oppression is, in general has a very steep price tag. And this is just confirming that this particular flavor of oppression
absolutely
can impact. And this is, I mean, not to be cold about it, but when you can prove that homophobia can impact your GDP in a nation that is known for skirting the edge between
develop and developing.
Yeah, because Indonesia, parts of the Indonesian economy are very, very progressive and very advanced and very modern and very technical and very wealthy, and other portions of Indonesian society are just abject poverty, and the whole country is on the doorstep of becoming something great. But for the past 20 years or so, they have always been just sitting on that doorstep. And a lot yeah. of people have been wondering, like, what is it that you're doing that is
well, extra $12 billion would certainly push it in one direction, that's for sure.
It wouldn't hurt. It definitely wouldn't hurt.
I want to take just a moment to look at home here in Canada. And there was a shocking news story that came across that worried me. A openly gay councilwoman in Toronto, Christine Wong Tam, got a letter in the mail essentially saying, you know, now that the police aren't going to be in the Pride Parade in Toronto, it's going to be that much easier to beat up homosexuals in the parade.
Yeah.
That won't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been to Toronto Pride, a million people there. You won't even get to the front. You know,
there's a lot of witnesses. You'd have to show up early with lawn chairs and snacks and lots of water because it is August, yeah. so it's nice and hot.
And near somewhere that has a public available washroom
yeah.
before you can even find somebody. Like, it's absolutely. I mean, Miss Wong Tam kind of took it very much under her belt and said, you know, these things happen. She gets three or four of them a year.
Hmm.
You know, Ottawa, Canada has its crazies.
Yeah.
Canada has its fundamentalists. It's, you know, it's people who would like to see us suffer.
It's something that we like to, we have this narrative about Canada being accepting and Canadians being progressive. But
and the best thing since sliced bread.
But you also have stories from like the late 30s and early 40s of synagogues having their cemeteries destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a lot of Nazi sympathizers here in North America.
Yeah.
Before they found out the extent. I mean, they liked the idea of slapping them around a little bit, but when they found out about the industrialization process, the neo-Nazis in Canada were like, whoa, that's a bit much even for us. But still, they existed.
Yeah.
They were around. And they supported the anti-Semitic messages. And that was coming out of Canada. Like, we're not the shining temple of purity that we like to talk about.
Now, moving to a slightly better news story is the Dutch MPs have voted to punish schools that don't teach LGBT awareness. So, essentially, they're clamping down.
Yeah.
And they believe that, you know, maybe about two-thirds of them do, maybe about 20%. I think I just read now, 20% of schools don't teach any kind of LGBT awareness.
Yeah.
And essentially the Dutch are saying, you know, that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
If there's a kid going to school in the Netherlands, they deserve to know about LGBT awareness across the board.
Yeah.
It shouldn't depend on where you are for your education.
And the general story, because I actually have looked into this before, the way that they're teaching LGBT awareness in the Netherlands, and also actually Sweden does the exact same thing. It's usually in middle school or the younger years of high school, so it'd be like 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, and basically all they do is they say, LGBT people, they exist.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the world, and if you're one of them, that's okay. That's the message. That's all they're supposed to do, is basically say, if you have these thoughts or feelings, you're not the only one. Because that is quite often what causes self-harm and death by suicide and all sorts of
isolation.
Issues. It's the isolation of believing that nobody else feels that way. And all they're required to do, at least, again, from what I understand of it, is basically say, they exist. If you're one of them, that's cool.
And that is
absolutely the responsibility.
Night and day to Chechnya, where you have to be secret and in the closet and very much isolated. Last news story of the show, and hopefully a bit of a shining beacon for folks to leave on, and a bit of an encouraging story. Mononmanyam Sundaranar University, and I apologize to any Indians listening, took the step to make academics free for trans folks. So essentially they're saying, you know what, trans people in India are pretty much roughshod. They are. Even in Canada, they are massively underemployed, massively unemployed. And in India, it's very much the same. And they're saying, you know what, if you want to improve your life, come here, get a degree. Don't worry about paying for it.
Yeah.
It is absolutely a phenomenal step to kind of a big humanitarian gesture to kind of improve the lives directly of these people.
India has been taking some very interesting progressive socialist answers to just the problems of life and the world's problems. So in the early 2000s, they noticed that they were having the population curve in India was getting out of hand. They were basically where China was in the 60s. And instead of introducing a China-like one-child-only policy, it's actually like 1.2-child policy. Mm-hmm. It's more complicated than one-child-only. But anyway, India, what they did is they just researched it, and they found that the more education a woman has, the fewer children they have. And so they just made high school obligatory to all women until the age of 18, and they made tuition cheaper for women, especially for undergrad. I think if it's your master's or PhD, you have to pay like everybody else. But like if it's your undergrad, women get in at a massively funded level. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's free, but I think it's pennies on the dollar. Basically, just on the notion that they would just educate women, empower women, make society better by having more productive people, and reduce their population levels by educating women. And it was sort of a win-win-win-win-win, and a whole bunch of people around the world, policy writers, and I think even people in Sweden were like, whoa, that was brilliant. And if you make people in Scandinavia praise you for long-term thinking, that's a big deal.
Absolutely.
But India, every so often, they do something like this where the rest of the world is jealous they didn't think of it first.
So India also, just last week, passed a law ensuring equal rights for folks living with HIV and AIDS.
Ooh.
Massive step. So, yeah, bad news out of Chechnya, Russia, and we mentioned Tanzania, and we also mentioned Indonesia. Mm-hmm. But look at India. Great news coming out of there. Unfortunately, that is all we have time for. We have run out of time.
And we've had other stories that we considered
as well. We had a few in our back pocket thinking, oh, should we talk about this? But we've run out of time. We're going to play out with some of Owen Parlant's song for 5 and 6. Unveiled some new electronic music he's been working on. He hasn't released it, so we can't get our hands on it. Just to get you thinking about Owen Pallett, we decided to run with this track.
Think about Owen Pallett.
Behave. That's all for now. I've been Nick Smith.
I've been Sebastian.
Of the infinite. Sing about a poetess.